Hello, and a very warm welcome to Fireside Chats. Today's topic is entitled Darkness and Light. While we explore the subject of spirituality, we ask you, the viewer, to ask yourself some all-important questions as to whether you are happy with your inner world. Is there anything that you'd like to change or any improvements that you'd like to effect? Spirituality is a vast and all-encompassing subject that helps you, the individual, to cope with the challenges of life. Today, I'd like to introduce you to Sister Denise, who has 40 years of spiritual experience behind her because she has studied Raj Yoga meditation for all this time. And she has been kind enough to share with us her thoughts and time today. Sister Denise, a very warm welcome.
Thank you.
And darkness and light, what exactly are you referring to?
The process that the soul goes through and the contents of the soul, you are passing through from the brightest to the darkest, again to the brightest, again to the darkest. That means you have to come to terms with the fact that you have your bright side and you have your dark side. Mm-hmm. Just like a regular day. Nighttime, daytime, followed by nighttime.
Sister Denise, what I've seen in a lot of people is that they have some level of appreciation for their good qualities, but they tend to hate their dark side or dislike themselves because of having this, this, and this weakness. What do you say to that?
Well, I heard it once said that your only problem is you're caught up in right and wrong.
Yeah.
Which means that you have to be able to accept your beautiful side as the same, with the same enthusiasm, you have to accept your ugly side.
Okay, accepting means what exactly?
Allowing it to be what it is. You know, there is a symbol that is a very ancient symbol. That's the symbol of the swastika. And this is a symbol that refers to the darkness and the light. The swastika is a rotating cross, which refers to the stages of bright light, dimmer light, less dark, extreme dark, this process of circling that a person goes through. And self-realization is connected with accepting your beauty and your ugliness, your brilliance and your ordinariness, what is known as the pairs of opposites, a part of the aim and object of a spiritual practice is to be equal in the face of both. And this equanimity is what we're after.
Sister Denise, if I have negative qualities of being critical towards myself and someone else, should I not, as a spiritually aware person, make effort to change it rather than just observe it and accept it? Should I not change it?
You see, coming to terms with your light and your darkness means that you're not going to be critical. Because being critical means you haven't come to terms with it. So you have to drop that, stop that.
Okay, say if someone is a habitual liar. Okay? Coming to terms with this aspect of one's dark side means what?
It's not really quite like that. You know, being a habitual liar is a reaction and a sign that you haven't accepted your dark side. These are symptoms rather than the thing itself.
What is the thing itself?
The thing itself is there are times when I am absolutely perfect and there are times when I'm absolutely imperfect, and I have to say I am the absolutely perfect one and I am the absolutely imperfect one. And there'll be moments at different times when your good qualities dominate, your bad qualities dominate, And when you're looking at yourself in the context of the full length of the cycle of time, and you're accepting yourself totally, you develop an attitude of neutrality towards your good side, your bad side, your dark side, your light side. And it's all about acquiring or arriving at that attitude of neutrality, where you're not going to be self-critical and you're not going to think you're the greatest thing since sliced bread, but you are equal and detached, even from your own self.
So what is one's feelings if you are in that state that you just described? Because if I look at the way I function, it's that we have highs and we have lows on any given day. Okay, when things go wrong, as it were, the lows become lower, and when we reach or have an accolade like getting a job promotion, then we're on a high. But in the scenario that you just mentioned, or rather the state that you just mentioned, what becomes then your experience?
When you go with the highs and the lows, so that when circumstances are low, you are low, when circumstances are high, you are high, you're just being going up and down like a yo-yo under the influence of circumstances. But when you step back from that and you become neutral about the good things, that is actually a practice that allows you to become neutral about the bad things, because it's all about taking it in. So if you receive, you accept all the accolades and you say, yes, great, you know, I am this, it's going to oblige you to accept all the criticisms and say, yes, I am that. So when you're winning, you feel good. When you're losing, you feel bad. But if you have a discipline which says, I'm not going to accept, I'm not going to take in the fruits of success as a personal discipline, because I know that it's, you know, all about up and down, so it's not going to stay up, it's going to go down as well. So I don't want to be caught up in the ups and downs. I have to be more neutral about it. So then you are independent of the ups and downs, which is that you're going further up.
Sister Denise, I'm of the view that the purpose of being alive is to experience. Now you're saying, be detached, so aren't you separating yourself from your experiences? Don't you, I don't know, die of ennui in that state?
I don't think it's really about that. When a lot of pleasure is sent to you from somewhere, and you take that, you receive the fruits of your good works or whatever, you've consumed it. And then the other side of the up and down curve comes along, and you are obligated to take the unpleasant fruits of that end of the down curve. Then I don't think that going into this, you know, what do you call it, manic depressive way of existing is the purpose of life. What you want is to be independent of the ups and downs of life, so that what you are is the result of your pure karma. So it's gently moving up and up and up, but independently of the ups and downs of circumstances. Then you're more of a master than a slave of circumstances.
Okay, so you create some distance between yourself and that which is happening around you.
Yes.
You've just now described the external world and external occurrences. What about your own ebb and flow of the tide of your own emotions? Because There are some days where you wake up feeling like $1 million, and there are other days you wonder, oh God, should I get out of bed in this condition? Okay, not necessarily brought on by circumstances, but this is the normal range of human experience. So how then do you manage your internal waves? And sometimes they are tsunamis.
Well, you want to go with the flow, but not be, you know, taken over by the highs or the lows. So take it, the high is there, good, that's great, enjoy, fine, but let it go. And then when the low part is there, okay, it's low, it's melancholic, it is what it is, and let that go too, so that you are not a slave of those feelings.
So, Sister Denise, in this scenario, you're referring to thoughts as well as feelings.
Thoughts, feelings, experiences, perceptions, all that.
You are able to create a distance between what you're feeling and you. I need to ask you this question in this context. Is a human being their thoughts? Are you your thoughts? And secondly, are you your feelings?
No. You are an extraordinary being of light who has a mind in which thoughts and feelings occur. So your thoughts and your feelings are it's like expressions, but they're not you. You have them. They're creations, you can say. You are the creator.
If you continue to practice this, there are things, though, and things and people and circumstances that catch you off guard. Okay? Somebody might betray you. Your body might betray you. Something negative can happen suddenly. How do you handle that? What do you draw from, and where do you draw from to handle things like that?
Well, you know, if you have a practice of being detached from the ups and downs, when some attack comes, some negative thing comes, that's just another bit of down that you're detached from. So it's really not going to impinge on your stability, because you see, the practice of being detached from the ups and downs is the practice of equanimity. And that's a very important part of yogic practice, to be able to be stable in the midst of extremes of ups and downs.
Sister Denise, you know what I find difficult to comprehend about what you just said? It sounds wonderful and it sounds like a solution, and I have no doubt that this is your experience. My difficulty with what you just said is that it is... okay, let me put it this way. You wake up in the morning, and we're so busy with life, okay? It's now internationally known that everyone's very attached to their cell phones. And the moment you put that down, you start fidgeting with your tablet. And the moment you put that down, then there's something on the laptop. And then there's your children and your spouse and your vocation that demands your attention. So at every single point in your life, there are things external to you that are demanding your attention. Now, to be the observer, you have to be looking inside. How do you do that when life is pulling you constantly on the outside?
There's always going to be moments when nothing's happening. And what happens is people don't like it when nothing's happening, because they're not used to just being with nothing happening. And so you fill your life with all of these things, and it's commercially very profitable to produce all these things, because people are not under the influence of the external when they are in their inner state, in their inner being, you see. And so in order for you to be a nice, good consumer, arrangements will be made for you to be uncomfortable in your own company. And so what a yogi will do is make breaks, you see. We have a system in the Brahma Kumaris practice that we call traffic control, which means that more or less every hour you will just stop. It's rather like when you're driving around in the city, you keep arriving at red lights and you have to stop. And what people normally do in front of red lights is they get irritated. And if somebody in front of you moves slowly, you press the horn or you get road rage or something like this. And this is because people cannot bear being still and having to wait or doing nothing. So you have to actually program that in so that you become just as easily able to be active or just as easily able to be passive, to be still, to be quiet, to be not doing anything, to be being, you see, so that you become equally able to be active or non-active. And then you're able to choose, you know, because there may be something that happens to you which really wants to draw your attention, but which is very not good for you to get your attention drawn because it's very harmful. And then you can be independent of that at will. So this is a very powerful practice.
For many, many people who can't tolerate their own company and who can't bear to be inside, who the moment they are inside, they experience things like boredom, irritation, I've got to do something, something is wrong. That pervasive feeling of something's wrong when you're not doing anything but just being. How do you make the transition from that to actually enjoying Sundays when you spend time alone and are not at work? How do you get there?
I think you have to do it little by little and practice meditating for a few seconds, then a few more. Practice to go for a walk by yourself. Practice to, you know, contemplate, look out of the window, see passing clouds, observe your day, you know, at the end of the day, just sit with yourself and replay the videotape of your day and evaluate yourself, you see, because what that will do is that you will learn how to introspect, and it's really very good to be able to do that. It may begin as quite difficult. It may be that the culture that you were raised in gives it negative press or doesn't allow it or whatever, and that's very prevalent. You know, children actually like to sit and do nothing, and then their parents and teachers let them feel that that's wrong, you see, and then they never develop their inner world. And this is why as adults they're unable to sit still. So you have to really undo all of that negative reinforcement done by parents and teachers who believe that sitting quietly with yourself is a waste of time. It's very essential to create a balanced personality.
Sister Denise, is it part and parcel of your spiritual journey to conquer your dark side, to transform your dark side? I assume that is. That's why you're living this life, aren't you?
I think that it's not useful to have an adversarial relationship with your dark side. What you need to do is embrace it and come to terms with it so that it doesn't conquer you, you know?
With respect, it doesn't make sense to me, because embracing your dark side is like saying, what, I'm a liar and I love myself for it.
No.
What does that mean?
It's not, being a liar is not your dark side.
What is?
You see, lying or some other such behavior is a reaction to your dark side.
What is your definition of dark side?
The dark side is a very deep feeling of the abyss or negativity or anxiety or that you're not worth anything or that you just can't stand that part of yourself. So you do something as a reaction to it, which is negative.
Okay, so your dark side is a tree, and the leaves and the fruit of which are your weaknesses.
Perhaps you could put it like that, but what you need to do is go to the root.
And the root
is? And come to terms with it, because if you come to terms with the fact that, okay, there is a darkness in you, you have the capacity to do something very negative, but you're not going to allow yourself to create that, the fruit of that. You see, the thing that's important is not to try and kill it, you see, because if you try and kill it, it's going to kill you.
That is sobering, what you just said. Very sobering, because many have done that and have suffered more as a result.
Yes. So I think it's better to say, okay, I have this dark side. Now, the dark side is, in a sense, just the very fact that the soul is weak, that the soul is empty. And you have to come to terms with that and also begin to fill with light so that the darkness of you doesn't take over. I see.
Mm-hmm.
Always be aware that you can anytime have a relapse.
Into
very dark behavior, which means that you have to always make sure that you have enough light to keep all of that in order.
In this context, what do you mean by light? Give me a practical example, something that you can think and feel and breathe.
Well, the essential qualities of the human soul are purity, peace, power, love, bliss. These are all attributes of light. And you take light from God in your meditation and you fill these, you can say, these fingers so that they're full, you know, because the space left by the loss of these qualities is your dark side. And so when you're filling up, then your dark side is only there when what needs to be there is used up. And it's used up because you didn't pay attention to keep it filled.
Do you believe that your weaknesses are related to your strengths, or are they two separate things? And by that I mean, is a weakness an absence of a strength or an absence of a power?
Yes, yes, yes.
So is it, when I was about 6 years old, we were taught something called the number line, where zero is in the middle, plus 10 is on one side and minus 10 is on the other side. So if you have a negative quality, then it simply means if you go further up this way towards the right, then you find your virtue. Do you?
Well, if you look at your spirit as containing or being made up of these essential divine qualities, as you live, you're using up this energy. And so the process of living causes the darkness to accumulate because you're using up your pure qualities. And what happens at a certain point in time when you're overcome with darkness, which is what has happened in the world today, this is why people are turning their attention to God, because that is the source from where you begin to fill. So I don't look at people as good and bad, but more like full and empty. So someone who's empty, they will do wrong actions because they're empty, because they're weak, not because they're bad. And so all they need is to be filled. They don't need to be punished. That's not going to help. They need to be filled so that they can then operate from fullness, from light.
Where does forgiveness fit into this picture? And by that I mean not forgiving others, but yourself for the mistakes that you made, the things that you done in the past that you shouldn't have. How does that fit into what you just said?
I think it's really the process is that, first of all, you have to admit it to yourself, to another person that you trust, to God. And then you see God will say, okay, I heard you, I took it, I accepted it, you give it away. And the corollary of that is that you no longer should permit yourself to go back and revisit it because you've given it, which means what you have to do is let go. Because what happens is, you know, you've given it, but you kind of take it back and then start feeling bad about it. And then it gets really bad inside. But if you say, okay, I've given it, you know, you admitted it to yourself, you admitted it to another person, you admitted it to God, and what did they say to you is, okay, don't do it again.
Sister Denise, one's dark side has a gravity to it, mm-hmm. and it pulls you mm-hmm. because that was what you were in the past. I've asked you this question before, but I'd like you to answer it in this context. What do you do to ensure that you are not perpetuating the identity, the person that you no longer wish to be?
I don't think it's an identity. I think that you have to look at it differently. You know, if a person says, okay, I am a murderer, that's an identity. But if you say, I killed someone, that's an action. I'm sorry, I regret, I make amends, I don't do it again. And that hole in the soul, that area of a vacuum where your quality of love, purity, peace was totally empty, that made it possible for you to do an act of that nature, you have to make sure that you keep yourself full. You must resource yourself, because otherwise that gravitational pull can pull you back there. And one of the problems, I think, is that our society likes to keep on, you know, making a person feel as bad as possible about themselves, which means that they are encouraging them to do that again. And that's counterproductive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's needed is the person has to feel. The person has to be honest, the person has to be real, the person has to go through psychological work, spiritual work, so many things to rehabilitate the self, but that is the best way.
Mr. Denise, last question. How do you bring God into this? Because from what you've said in the past, God is all light.
Yes.
Okay, with no dark side. That's why
right.
he, she is God. Then how does God's light impact on the human soul who's dichotomous?
You can look at it one way. Is what God does is pours himself into all souls so that they're all full.
Pours, P-O-U-R-S.
Yes.
Pour.
Yes.
Pours, okay.
And then the souls use that up, that energy up, and they get empty, which is what makes them dark. And then they get so hungry, they have to go again to God to get full again, because there's a kind of like a safety mechanism in a soul, that the soul can get almost empty, but it can never get totally empty. So like a battery in certain devices, it will flash and jump up and down and make a noise, low battery, you know, fill me up. And this is something that's happening in souls, is I'm running on empty, I've got to get full. And the problem is they go and try and fill up with all the wrong things, so it doesn't work. Eventually the soul has to connect with God, because it cannot cease to exist. So there's like a mechanism, which is why I said earlier that every soul has an encounter with God, and that that encounter is when the soul fills up to capacity. And the memory of being restored to your completeness and your sanity and your wholeness is indelibly marked on your heart, and your heart will be unable to prevent itself from looking for that source until it finds it, and when it finds it, it gloms onto it and fills. That is the nature of the human spirit and its relationship with God.
You describe God as a as kind of like a petrol station.
Yes.
The only petrol station for the human soul.
Yes.
That's the image that comes to mind. We have to say goodbye to you right now, which is a pity, because this was a very beautiful and fascinating subject, and thank you for sharing.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sister Denise, for joining us. Thank you, viewer, for joining us. It was great to have you. I hope that you have taken something from this show. Sister Denise's gift is that she has the ability to share spiritual knowledge in an extremely eloquent and gripping fashion, in such a way that you and I are able to comprehend the depth of what she is sharing. I particularly like the aspect that human beings are not good or bad, but simply empty or full. And so I would ask you that question: are you empty or are you full? And how empty or how full are you? And irrespective of where you measure on the spiritual scale, help is at hand, and God is waiting to fill the gaps within you, the soul. So take this message to heart, and good luck on your own spiritual journey. Thank you, and goodbye.